He looked away.
"This will be for the best," he said. "It's for your own good."
"I'm sure it is," she snapped, but allowed herself to be led back to her rooms. Vivenna sat among the crowds, watching and waiting. Part of her found it foolish to come out into the open so flagrantly. However, that part of her, the cautious Idrian princess, was growing more and more quiet. Dent's people had found her when she'd been hiding in the slums. She'd probably be safer in the crowds with Vasher than she ever had been in the alleyways, particularly considering how well she now blended in. She hadn't realized how natural it could feel to sit in trousers and a tunic, brightly colored and completely ignored. Vasher appeared at the railing above the benches. She carefully slipped out of her seat. Someone else took it immediately and walked toward him. The priests had already begun their arguments down below. Nanrava, his daughter restored to him, had started by announcing the retraction of his previous position. He currently was leading the discussion against war. He had very little support. Vivenna joined Vasher along the railing, and he quite unapologetically elbowed open a space for her. He didn't carry Nightblood. At her insistence, he had left the sword behind with her own dueling blade. She wasn't certain how he'd managed to sneak the blade in the last time he'd come to the court, but the last thing they wanted was to draw attention. "Well?" she asked quietly. He shook his head.
"If Denth is here, I couldn't find him."
"No surprise, considering the size of this crowd," Vivenna said quietly. There were bodies all around them, hundreds lining the railing alone. "Where did they all come from? This is far more jammed than the other assembly sessions." He shrugged.
"People who are granted a one-time visit to the court can hold their token of entry until they want to use it. A lot of them use those at a general court assembly, rather than one of the smaller meetings. It's their one chance to see all of the gods together."
Vivenna turned back to look over the throng. She suspected it also had to do with the rumors she'd heard. People thought that this session would be the one where the Pantheon of Returned finally declared war on Idris. "Nanrava argues well," she said, although she was having trouble hearing him because of the crowds. The Returned apparently had messengers relaying transcripts. She wondered why someone just didn't order all the people to be quiet. That didn't seem to be the Halandrin way. They liked chaos, or at least they liked the opportunity to sit and chat while important events were in progress.
"Nanrava is being ignored," Vasher said. "He's changed his mind twice now on the same issue. He lacks credibility."
"He should explain why he changed his mind, then."
"He might, but I don't know. If the people knew his child had been kidnapped, it would make some more afraid, and they would decide that Idrian instigators had been behind it, no matter what he said. Plus, there's that stubborn Halandrin pride. Priests are particularly bad. Mentioning that his daughter had been taken, and that he had been pressured into changing his politics."
"I thought you liked the priests," she said.
"Some of them," he said, "not others."
When he said that, he eyed the God King's pedestal. Sesebron had yet to arrive, and they had started without him. Ciri wasn't there either. That annoyed Vivenna, since she'd been anticipating checking in on the girl, if only from a distance. "I'll help you, Ciri. For real, this time. The first step has to be stopping this war." Vasher looked back at the floor of the arena, leaning on the railing, looking anxious. "What?" she asked. He shrugged. She rolled her eyes. "Tell me."
"I just don't like leaving Nightblood alone for too long," he said.
"What's it going to do?" Vivenna asked. "We locked it in the closet." He shrugged again. "Honestly," she said, You would think that you'd admit that bringing a 5-foot-long black sword out in public would be rather conspicuous. It doesn't help, mind you, that said sword bleeds smoke and can talk in people's minds.
I don't mind being conspicuous.
I do, she replied. Vasher grimaced, and she thought he'd argue some more, but he finally just nodded.
You're right, of course, he said. I've just never been good at being unobtrusive. Denth used to make fun of me for that, too.
Vivenna frowned. You were friends? Vasher turned away and fell silent. Kalad's phantoms, she thought in frustration. One of these days, someone in this colors-cursed city is going to tell me the whole truth. I'll probably die of shock.
I'm going to go see if I can find out why the God King is taking so long,
Vasher said, leaving the railing.
I'll be back.
She nodded, and he was gone. She leaned down, wishing she hadn't relinquished her seat. Once, she would have felt stifled by the large mass of people, but she'd grown used to the busy market streets, and so being surrounded by people wasn't as intimidating as it had been. Besides, there was her breath. She'd put some of it into her shirt, but she'd held on to a portion. She needed to be of at least the first tightening to pass through the gates into the court without being questioned. Her breath let her feel life as an ordinary person felt the air, always there, cool against the skin. Having so many people in such close proximity left her feeling a little intoxicated. So much life, so many hopes and desires, so much breath. She closed her eyes, drinking it in, listening to the voices of the priests down below rise over the crowd. She felt Vasher approach before he arrived. Not only did he have a lot of breath, but he was watching her, and she could feel the slight familiarity of that gaze. She turned, picking him out of the crowd. He stood out far more than she did, in his darker, ragged clothing.
Congratulations,
he said as he approached, taking her arm. Why?
You'll soon be an aunt.
What are you? She trailed off. Ciri?
Your sister is pregnant, he said. The priests are going to make an announcement later this evening. The God King is apparently remaining in his palace to celebrate.
Vivenna stood, stunned. Ciri. Pregnant. Ciri, who was still a little girl in Vivenna's mind, bearing the child of that thing in the palace. And yet wasn't Vivenna now fighting to keep that thing on his throne?
No, she thought. I haven't forgiven Halandrin, even if I am learning not to hate it. I can't let Idris be attacked and destroyed.
She felt a panic. Suddenly all of her plans seemed meaningless. What would the Halandrin do to her once they had their heir? We have to get her out, Vivenna found herself saying. Vasher, we have to rescue her. He remained quiet.
Please, Vasher, she whispered. She's my sister. I thought to protect her by ending this war. But if your hunch is right, then the God King himself is one of those who wants to invade Idris. Ciri won't be safe with him.
All right, Vasher said.
I'll do what I can.
Vivenna nodded, turning back to the arena. The priests were withdrawing. Where are they going?
To their gods,
Vasher said,
to seek the will of the Pantheon in formal vote.
About the war? Vivenna asked, feeling a chill. Vasher nodded.
It is time.
Lightsong waited beneath his canopy, a couple of serving men fanning him, a cup of chill juice in his hand, lavish snacks spread out to his side. Blushweaver brought me into this, he thought, because she was worried that Halandrin would be taken by surprise. The priests were consulting with their gods. He could see several of them kneeling before they returned, heads bowed. It was the way that government worked in Halandrin. The priests debated their options, and then they sought the will of the gods. That would become the will of the Pantheon. That would become the will of Halandrin itself. Only the God King could veto a decision of the full Pantheon. And he had chosen not to attend this meeting. So self-congratulatory on spawning a child that he couldn't even bother with the future of his people? Lightsong thought with annoyance. I had hoped he was better than that. Larimar approached. Though he had been down below with the other high priests, he had offered no arguments to the court. Larimar tended to keep his thoughts to himself. The high priest knelt before him.
Please, favor us with your will, Lightsong my god.
Lightsong didn't respond. He looked up, across the open arena to where Blushweaver's canopy stood, verdant in the dimming evening light.
O God, Larimar said, please, give me the knowledge I seek. Should we go to war with our kinsmen, the Idrians? Are they rebels who need to be quelled?
Priests were already returning from their supplications. Each held aloft a flag indicating the will of their god or goddess. Green for a favorable response, red for dissatisfaction with the petition. In this case, green meant war. So far, five of the returning seven flew green.
Your grace?
Larimar asked, looking up. Lightsong stood. They vote. But what good are their votes? He thought, walking out from beneath his canopy. They hold no authority. Only two votes really matter. More green. Flags flapped as priests ran down the walkways. The arena was abuzz with people. They could see the inevitable. To the side, Lightsong could see Larimar following him. The man must be frustrated. Why didn't he ever show it? Lightsong approached Blushweaver's pavilion. Almost all of the priests had gotten their answers, and the vast majority of them carried flags of green. Blushweaver's high priestess still knelt before her. Blushweaver, of course, waited upon the drama of the moment. Lightsong stopped outside of her canopy. Blushweaver reclined inside, watching him calmly, though he could sense her true anxiety. He knew her too well.
Are you going to make your will known?
She asked. He looked down at the center of the arena. If I resist, he said, this declaration will be for naught. The gods can shout war until they are blue, but I control the armies. If I don't allow them my lifeless, then Halandrin will not win any wars.
You would defy the will of the Pantheon?
It is my right to do so, he said, just as any of them have the same right.
But you have the lifeless.
That doesn't mean I have to do what I'm told.
There was a moment of silence before Blushweaver waved to her priestess. The woman stood, then raised a flag of green, and ran down to join the others. This brought forth a roar. The people must know that Blushweaver's political wranglings had left her in a position of power. Not bad for a person who had started without command of a single soldier. With her control of that many troops, she'll be an integral part of the planning, diplomacy, and execution of the war. Blushweaver could emerge from this as one of the most powerful returned in the history of the kingdom. And so could I.
He stared for a long moment. He hadn't spoken of his dreams the last night to Larimar. He'd kept them to himself. Those dreams of twisting tunnels and of the rising moon, just barely cresting the horizon. Could it be possible that they actually meant something? He couldn't decide. About anything. I need to think about this some more, Lightsong said, turning to go.
What?
Blushweaver demanded.
What about the vote?
Lightsong shook his head.
Lightsong, she said as he left. Lightsong, you can't leave us hanging like this.
He shrugged, glancing back. Actually, I can, he smiled. I'm frustrating like that. And with that, he left the arena, heading back to his palace without giving his vote.
Chapter 51.
I'm glad you came back for me, Nightblood said. It was very lonely in that closet.
Vasher didn't reply as he walked across the top of the wall surrounding the court of gods. It was late, dark, and quiet, though a few of the palaces still shone with light. One of those belonged to Lightsong the Bold.
I don't like the darkness, Nightblood said. You mean darkness like now?
Vasher asked.
No, in the closet. You can't even see.
A person knows when they're in darkness, Nightblood said, even when they can't see. Vasher didn't know how to respond to that. He paused atop the wall, overlooking Lightsong's palace. Red and gold. Bold colors, indeed.
You shouldn't ignore me, Nightblood said. I don't like it.
Vasher knelt down, studying the palace. He'd never met the one called Lightsong, but he had heard rumors. The most scurrilous of the gods, the most condescending and mocking. And this was the person who held the fate of two kingdoms in his hands. There was an easy way to influence that fate.
We're going to kill him, aren't we?
Nightblood said, eagerness sharp in his voice. Vasher just stared at the palace.
We should kill him, Nightblood continued. Come on, we should do it. We really should do it. Why do you care?
Vasher whispered.
You don't know him.
He's evil, Nightblood said. Vasher snorted.
You don't even know what that is.
For once, Nightblood was silent. That was the great crux of the problem, the issue that had dominated most of Vasher's life. 1,000 breaths. That was what it took to awaken an object of steel and give it sentience. Even Shashara hadn't fully understood the process, though she had first devised it. It took a person who had reached the 9th heightening to awaken stone or steel. Even then, this process shouldn't have worked. It should have created an awakened object with no more of a mind than the tassels on his cloak. Nightblood should not be alive. And yet he was. Shashara had always been the most talented of them, far more capable than Vasher himself, who had used tricks like encasing bones in steel or stone to make his creations. Shashara had been spurred on by the knowledge that she'd been shown up by Yestiel and the development of ichor alcohol. She had studied, experimented, practiced, and she'd done it. She'd learned to forge the breath of 1,000 people into a piece of steel, awaken it to sentience, and give it a command. That single command took on immense power, providing a foundation for the personality of the object awakened. With Nightblood, she and Vasher had spent much time in thought, then finally chosen a simple yet elegant command. Destroy evil. It had seemed like such a perfect, logical choice. There was only one problem, something neither of them had foreseen. How was an object of steel, an object that was so removed from life that it would find the experience of living strange and alien, supposed to understand what evil was?
I'm figuring it out, Nightblood said. I've had a lot of practice.
The sword wasn't really to blame. It was a terrible, destructive thing, but it had been created to destroy. It still didn't understand life or what life meant. It only knew its command.
and it tried so very hard to fulfill it.
"That man down there," Nightblood said, "the god in the palace, he holds the power to start this war. You don't want this war to start. That's why he's evil."
"Why does that make him evil?"
"Because he will do what you don't want him to."
"We don't know that for certain,"
Vasher said.
"Plus, who is to say that my judgment is best?"
"It is," Nightblood said. "Let's go. Let's kill him. You told me war is bad. He will start a war. He's evil. Let's kill him. Let's kill him."
The sword was getting excited. Vasher could feel it, feel the danger in its blade, the twisted power of breaths that had been pulled from living hosts and shoved into something unnatural. He could picture them breathing out, black and corrupted, twisting in the wind, drawing him toward Lightsong, pushing him to kill.
"No,"
Vasher said.
Nightblood sighed.
"You locked me in a closet," he reminded. "You should apologize."
"I'm not going to apologize by killing someone."
"Just throw me in there," Nightblood said. "If he's evil, he'll kill himself."
This gave Vasher pause.
"Colors," he thought.
The sword seemed to be getting more subtle each year, though Vasher knew he was just imagining things, projecting. Awakened objects didn't change or grow. They simply were what they were. It was still a good idea.
"Maybe later,"
Vasher said, turning away from the building.
"You are afraid," Nightblood said.
"You don't know what fear is,"
Vasher replied. "I do. You don't like killing returned. You're afraid of them."
The sword was wrong, of course, but on the outside, Vasher supposed that his hesitation did look like fear. It had been a long time since he dealt with the returned. Too many memories, too much pain. He made his way to the God King's palace. The structure was old, far older than the palaces that surrounded it. Once, this place had been a seaside outpost, overlooking the bay. No city, no colors, just the stark, black tower. It amused Vasher that it had become the home of the God King of iridescent tones. Vasher slid Nightblood into a strap on his back, then jumped from the wall toward the palace. Awakened tassels around his legs gave him extra strength, letting him leap some 20 feet. He slammed against the side of the building, smooth onyx blocks rubbing his skin. He twitched his fingers, and the tassels on his sleeves grabbed onto the ledge above him, holding him tight. He breathed, the belt at his waist, touching his skin, as always, awakened. Color drained from the kerchief tied to his leg beneath his trousers.
"Climb things, then grab things, then pull me up," he commanded.
3 commands in 1 awakening. A difficult task for some. For him, however, it had become as simple as blinking. The belt untied itself, revealing it to be far longer than it looked when wrapped around him. The 25 feet of rope snaked up the side of the building, curling inside of a window. Seconds later, the rope hauled Vasher up and into the air. Awakened objects could, if created well, have much more strength than regular muscles. He'd once seen a small group of ropes, not much thicker than his own, lift and toss boulders at an enemy fortification. He released his tassel grips, then pulled Nightblood free as the rope deposited him inside the building. He knelt silently, eyes searching the darkness. The room was unoccupied. Carefully, he drew back his breath, then wrapped the rope around his arm and held it in a loose coil. He stalked forward.
"Who are we going to kill?"
Nightblood asked.
"It's not always about killing,"
Vasher said.
"Vivenna, is she in here?"
The sword was trying to interpret his thoughts again. It had trouble with things that weren't fully formed in Vasher's head. Most thoughts passing through a man's mind were fleeting and momentary. Flashes of image, sound, or scent.
Connections made, then lost, then recovered again. That sort of thing was difficult for Nightblood to interpret. Vivenna, the source of a lot of his troubles. His work in the city had been easier when he'd been able to assume that she was working willingly with Denth. Then, at least, he'd been able to blame her.
Where is she? Is she here? She doesn't like me, but I like her.
Vasher hesitated in the dark hallway.
You do?
Yes, she's nice, and she's pretty. Nice and pretty. Words that Nightblood didn't really understand. He had simply learned when to use them. Still, the sword did have opinions, and it rarely lied. It must like Vivenna, even if it couldn't explain why. She reminds me of a returned, the sword said.
Ah, Vasher thought. Of course, that makes sense.
He moved on.
What?
Nightblood said.
She's descended from one,
he thought.
You can tell by the hair. There's a bit of returned in her.
Nightblood didn't respond to that, but Vasher could feel it thinking. He paused at an intersection. He was pretty sure he knew where the God King's chambers would be. However, a lot of the interior seemed different now. The fortress had been stark, built with odd twists and turns to confuse an invading foe. Those remained. All the stonework was the same. But the open dining halls or garrison rooms had been split into many smaller rooms, colorfully decorated in the mode of the Hallandrin upper class. Where would the God King's wife be? If she was pregnant, she'd be under the care of servants. One of the larger complex of chambers, he assumed, on a higher level. He made his way to a stairwell. Fortunately, it seemed late enough that there were very few people awake.
The sister, Nightblood said. That's who you're after. You're rescuing Vivenna's sister.
Vasher nodded quietly in the darkness, feeling his way up the stairs, counting on his biochroma to let him know if he approached anyone. Though most of his breath was stored in his clothing, he had just enough to awaken the rope and to keep him aware.
You like Vivenna too,
Nightblood said.
Nonsense,
Vasher thought. Then why?
Her sister, he thought. She's a key to all of this, somehow. I realized it today. As soon as the Queen arrived, the real move to start the war surged.
Nightblood fell silent. That kind of logical leap was a bit too complex for it. I see, he said, though Vasher smiled at the confusion he sensed in the voice.
At the very least, Vasher thought, she's a very handy hostage for the Hallandrin. The God King's priests, or whoever's behind this, can threaten the girl's life should the war go poorly for them. She makes an excellent tool.
One you intend to remove, Nightblood said. Vasher nodded, reaching the top of the stairwell and slinking through one of the corridors. He walked until he sensed someone nearby, a maidservant approaching. Vasher awakened his rope, stood in the shadows of an alcove, and waited. As she passed, the rope shot from the shadows, wrapped around her waist, and yanked her into the darkness. Vasher had one of his tassel hands wrapped around her mouth before she could scream. She squirmed, but the rope tied her tightly. She felt a little stab of guilt as he loomed over her, her terrified eyes tearing up. He reached for Nightblood and pulled the sword slightly out of its sheath. The girl immediately looked sick. A good sign.
I need to know where the Queen is,
Vasher said, forcing Nightblood up so that its hilt touched her cheek.
You're going to tell me.
He held her like that for a time, watching her squirm, feeling unhappy with himself. Finally, he relaxed the tassels, keeping the sword against her cheek. She began to vomit, and he turned her to the side.
Tell me,
he whispered.
Southern corner,
the girl whispered, trembling, spittle on her cheek.
This floor.
Vasher nodded, then tied her up with a rope, gagged her, and took his breath back. He pushed Nightblood back into the sheath and then rushed down the hallway.
"You won't kill a god who plans to march his armies to war?"
Nightblood asked.
"But you'll nearly choke a young woman to death?"
It was a complicated statement for the sword. However, it lacked the accusation that a human would have put into the words. To Nightblood, it really was just a question.
"I don't understand my morality either,"
Vasher thought.
"I'd suggest you avoid confusing yourself."
He found the place easily. It was guarded by a large group of brutish men who seemed rather out of place in the fine palace hallways. Vasher paused.
"Something strange is going on here."
"What do you mean?"
Nightblood asked. He hadn't meant to address the sword, but that was the trouble with an object that could read minds. Any thoughts Vasher formed in his head, Nightblood thought were directed at it. After all, in the sword's opinion, everything really should have been directed toward it. Guards at the door. Soldiers, not servants. So they had already taken her captive. Was she really even pregnant? Were the priests just securing their power? That many men would be impossible to kill without making noise. The best he could hope for was to take them fast. Maybe they were far enough from anyone else that a brief fight wouldn't be heard. He sat for a few minutes, jaw clenched. Then, finally, he stepped closer and tossed Nightblood in amongst the men. He'd let them fight each other and then be ready to deal with any who weren't taken into the sword's influence. Nightblood clanged to the stones. All of the men's eyes turned toward it. And, at that moment, something grabbed Vasher by the shoulder and yanked him backward. He cursed, spinning, throwing his hands up to wrestle with whatever had him. An awakened rope. Men started to fight behind him. Vasher grunted, pulling out the knife in his boot, then slicing the awakened rope. Someone tackled him as he got free, and he was thrown back against the wall. He grabbed his attacker by the face with one of his arm tassels, then twisted the man back and threw him into the wall. Another figure charged him from behind, but Vasher's awakened cloak caught that one, tripping him.
"Grab things other than me,"
Vasher said quickly, snatching the cloak of one of the fallen men and awakening it. That cloak whipped about, taking down another man, whom Vasher then killed with a swipe of his dagger. He kicked another man, throwing him backward, opening a pathway. Vasher lunged, making for Nightblood, but three more figures burst out of the rooms around him, cutting him off. They were the same kind of brutish men that were now fighting over the sword. Men were all around, dozens of them. Vasher kicked out, breaking a leg, but one man pulled Vasher's cloak off with a lucky twist. Others piled on top of him, and then another awakened rope snapped out, tying his legs together. Vasher reached for his vest.
"Your breath too,"
he began, trying to draw in some breath to use for an attack. But three men grabbed his hand and pulled it away. Within seconds, he was wrapped up in the awakened rope. His cloak still fought against three men who were struggling to cut it up. But Vasher himself was pinned. Someone emerged from the room to his left.
"Denth,"
Vasher spat, struggling.
"My good friend,"
Denth said, nodding for one of his lackeys, the one known as Tonk Fa, to move down the hallway toward the queen's room. Denth knelt beside Vasher.
"Very good to see you again."
Vasher spat again.
"Still as eloquent as ever, I see,"
Denth said with a sigh.
"You know the best thing about you, Vasher? You're solid, predictable. I guess I am too, in a way. Hard to live as long as we have without falling into patterns, eh?"
Vasher didn't reply, though he did try to yell as some men gagged him. He noticed with satisfaction that he'd taken down a good dozen opponents before they'd managed to stop him. Denth eyed the fallen soldiers.
"Mercenaries," he said. No risk is too great, assuming the pay is right.
He said it with a twinkle in his eye. Then he leaned down, his joviality gone as he met Vasher's eyes.
And you were always to be my payment, Vasher. I owe you. For Shashara, even still. We've been waiting, hidden in the palace here for a good 2 weeks, knowing that eventually the good Princess Vivenna would send you to save her sister.
Tong Fa returned with a bundle held in a blanket. Nightblood.
Denth eyed it. Throw that out somewhere far away, he said, grimacing.
I don't know, Denth, Tong Fa said. I kind of think we should keep it. It could be very useful.
The beginnings of the lust began to show in his eyes, the desire to draw Nightblood, to use the sword, to destroy evil, or, really, just to destroy.
Denth stood and snatched the bundle away. Then he smacked Tong Fa on the back of the head.
Ow! Tong Fa said.
Denth rolled his eyes. Stop whining. I just saved your life. Go check on the queen, and then clean up that mess. I'll take care of the sword myself.
You always get so nasty when Vasher's around,
Tong Fa grumbled, waddling away. Denth wrapped up Nightblood securely. Vasher watched, hoping to see the lust appear in Denth's eyes. Unfortunately, Denth was far too strong-willed to be taken by the sword. He had nearly as much history with it as Vasher did.
Take away all his awakened clothing, Denth said to his men, walking away. Then hang him up in that room over there. He and I are going to have a long talk about what he did to my sister.
Chapter 52 Lightsong sat in one of the rooms of his palace, surrounded by finery, a cup of wine in his hand. Despite the very late hour, servants moved in and out, piling up furniture, paintings, vases, and small sculptures, anything that could be moved. The riches sat in heaps. Lightsong lounged back on his couch, ignoring empty plates of food and broken cups, which he refused to let his servants take away. A pair of servants entered, carrying a red and gold couch. They propped it up by the far wall, nearly toppling a pile of rugs. Lightsong watched them leave, then down the rest of his wine. He dropped the empty cup to the floor beside the others and held out his hand for another full one. A servant provided, as always. He wasn't drunk. He couldn't get drunk.
Do you ever feel, Lightsong said, like something is going on? Something far greater than you are? Like a painting you can only see the corner of, no matter how you squint and search?
Every day, Your Grace,
Larimar said. He sat on a stool beside Lightsong's couch. As always, he watched events calmly, though Lightsong could sense the man's disapproval as another group of servants piled several marble figurines in the corner.
How do you deal with it?
Lightsong asked.
I have faith, Your Grace, that someone understands.
Not me, I hope,
Lightsong noted.
You are part of it, but it is much larger than you.
Lightsong frowned to himself, watching more servants enter. Soon the room would be so piled with his wealth that his servants wouldn't be able to move in and out.
It's odd, isn't it?
Lightsong said, gesturing toward a pile of paintings. Arranged like this, none of it looks beautiful anymore. When you put it together in piles, it just seems like junk. Larimar raised an eyebrow.
The value in something relates to how it is treated, Your Grace. If you see these items as junk, then they are, regardless of what someone else would pay for them.
There's a lesson in there somewhere, isn't there?
Larimar shrugged.
I am a priest, after all. We have a tendency to preach.
Lightsong snorted, then waved toward the servants.
That's enough, he said. You can go now.
The servants, having grown resigned to being banished, left the room promptly. Soon Lightsong and Larimar were alone with piles and piles of riches, all stolen from other parts of his palace and brought into this one room. Larimar surveyed the mounds.
"So what is the point of all this, Your Grace?"
"This is what I mean to them," Lightsong said, gulping down some more wine. "The people. They'll give up their riches for me. They sacrifice the breath of their souls to keep me alive. I suspect that many would even die for me." Larimar nodded quietly. "And," Lightsong said, "all I'm expected to do at the moment is choose their fates for them. Do we go to war, or do we remain at peace? What do you think?"
"I could argue for either side, Your Grace," Larimar said. "It would be easy to sit here and condemn the war on mere principle. War is a terrible, terrible thing. And yet, it seems that few great accomplishments in history ever occur without the unfortunate fact of military action. Even the Many War, which caused so much destruction, can be regarded as the foundation of modern Halandrin power in the Inner Sea region."
Lightsong nodded.
"But," Larimar continued, "to attack our brethren, despite provocation, I cannot help but think that invading is too extreme. How much death, how much suffering are we willing to cause simply to prove that we won't be pushed around?"
"And what would you decide?"
"Fortunately, I don't have to."
"And if you were forced to?" Lightsong asked. Larimar sat for a moment. Then, carefully, he removed the large mitre from his head, revealing his thinning black hair plastered to the skull with sweat. He set aside the ceremonial headgear.
"I speak to you as a friend, Lightsong, not your priest,"
Larimar said quietly.
"The priest cannot influence his god for fear of disrupting the future."
Lightsong nodded.
"And as a friend,"
Larimar said,
"I honestly have trouble deciding what I would do. I didn't argue on the floor of the court."
"You rarely do," Lightsong said.
"I'm worried,"
Larimar said, wiping his brow with a kerchief, shaking his head.
"I don't think we can ignore the threat to our kingdom. The fact of the matter is, Idris is a rebel faction living within our borders. We've ignored them for years, enduring their almost tyrannical control of the northern passes."
"So you're for attacking?" Larimar paused, then shook his head.
"No. No. I don't think that even Idris's rebellion can justify the slaughter it would take to get those passes back."
"Great," Lightsong said flatly. "So, you think we should go to war, but not attack?"
"Actually, yes,"
Larimar said.
"We declare war. We make a show of force, and we frighten them into realizing just how precarious their position is. If we then hold peace talks, I'll bet we could forge more favorable treaties for use of the passes. They formally renounce their claim of our throne. We recognize their independent sovereignty. Wouldn't we both get what we want?"
Lightsong sat thoughtfully.
"I don't know," he said. "That's a very reasonable solution, but I don't think those who are calling for war would accept it. It seems that we're missing something, Scoot. Why now? Why are tensions so high after the wedding, which should have unified us?"
"I don't know, Your Grace,"
Larimar said. Lightsong smiled, standing.
"Well then," he said, eyeing his high priest, "let's find out."
Ciri would have been annoyed if she hadn't been so terrified. She sat alone in the black bedchamber.
It felt wrong for Sesebron to not be there with her. She'd hoped that maybe he would still be allowed to come to her when night fell, but, of course, he didn't arrive. Whatever the priests were planning, it didn't require her to actually be pregnant. Not now that they'd played their hand and locked her up. The door creaked, and she sat up on the bed, hope reviving. But it was only the guard checking on her again. One of the crass, soldier-like men who had been guarding her in recent hours. Why did they change to these men? She wondered, as the guard closed the door. What happened to the lifeless and the priests who were watching me before? She lay back down on the bed, staring up at the canopy, still dressed in her fine gown. Her mind kept flashing to her first week in the palace, when she'd been locked inside for her wedding jubilation. It had been difficult enough then, and she'd known when it would be over. Now she didn't even have an assurance that she'd live through the next few days. No, she thought, they'll keep me around long enough for my baby to be born. I'm insurance. If something goes wrong, they'll still need me to show off. That was little comfort. The thought of 6 months cooped up inside the palace, not allowed to see anyone lest they see that she wasn't really pregnant, was frightening enough to make her want to scream. But what could she do? Hope in Sesebron, she thought. I taught him to read, and I gave him the determination that he needed to break free from his priests. That will have to be enough.
Your grace,
Larimar said, his voice hesitant.
Are you certain you want to do this?
Lightsong crouched down, peeking through the bushes toward Mercy Star's palace. Most of the windows were dark. That was good. However, she still had a number of guards patrolling the palace. She was afraid of another break-in. And rightly so. In the distance, he saw the moon just barely rising into the night sky. It almost matched the position he had seen in his dream the night before, the same dream where he'd seen the tunnels. Were these things really symbols? Signs from the future? He still resisted. The truth was, he didn't want to believe he was a god. It implied too many things. But he couldn't ignore the images, even if they were just spoken from his subconscious. He had to get into those passages beneath the court of gods, had to see if, at last, there was something prophetic about what he had seen. The timing seemed important. The rising moon, just another degree or so. There, he thought, looking down from the sky. A guard patrol was approaching.
Your grace?
Larimar asked, sounding more nervous. The portly high priest knelt on the grass beside Lightsong.
I should have brought a sword,
Lightsong said thoughtfully.
You don't know how to use one, Your Grace.
We don't know that, Lightsong said.
Your Grace, this is foolishness. Let's go back to your palace. If we must see what is in those tunnels, we can hire someone from the city to sneak in.
That would take too long, Lightsong said.
A guard patrol passed their side of the palace. You ready? He asked, once the patrol had passed.
No.
Then wait here, Lightsong said, taking off in a dash toward the palace. After a moment, he heard a hissed,
Kalad's phantoms,
from Larimar, followed by bushes rustling as the priest followed.
Why, I don't believe I've ever heard him curse before, Lightsong thought with amused energy.
He didn't look back, he just kept running toward the open window. As in most returned palaces, the doorways and windows were open. The tropical climate encouraged such designs. Lightsong reached the side of the building, feeling exhilarated. He climbed up through the window, then reached a hand out to help Larimar when he arrived. The hefty priest puffed and sweated, but Lightsong managed to pull him up and into the room. They took a few moments, Larimar resting with his back to the outer wall, gasping for breath.
You really need to exercise more regularly, Scoot,
Lightsong said, creeping toward the doorway and peeking out into the hall beyond. Larimar didn't answer. He just sat, puffing, shaking his head, as if he couldn't believe what was happening.
I wonder why the man who attacked the building didn't come in through the window,
Lightsong said. Then he noticed that the guard standing at the inner doorway had an easy view of this particular room.
Ah, he thought. Well then, time for the backup plan.
Lightsong stood up, walking out into the hallway. Larimar followed, then jumped when he saw the guards. They had similar expressions of amazement on their faces.
Hello, Lightsong said to the guards, then turned from them and walked down the hallway.
Wait, one said. Stop!
Lightsong turned toward them, frowning.
You dare command a god?
They froze. Then they glanced at each other. One took off running in the opposite direction.
They're going to alert others,
Larimar said, rushing up.
We'll be caught.
Then we should move quickly,
Lightsong said, taking off in another run. He smiled, hearing Larimar grudgingly break into a jog behind him. They quickly reached the trap door. Lightsong knelt, feeling around for a few moments before finding the hidden clasp. He triumphantly pulled the trap door open, then pointed down. Larimar shook his head in resignation, then climbed down the ladder into the darkness. Lightsong grabbed a lamp off the wall and followed. The remaining guard, unable to interfere with a god, simply watched with concern. The bottom wasn't very far down. Lightsong found a tired Larimar sitting on some boxes in what was obviously a small storage cellar.
Congratulations, Your Grace, Larimar said. We've found the secret hiding place of their flower.
Lightsong snorted, moving through the chamber, poking at the walls.
Something living, he said, pointing at one wall. That direction. I can feel it with my life sense.
Larimar raised an eyebrow, standing. They pulled back a few boxes, and behind them was a small tunnel entrance cut into the wall. Lightsong smiled, then crawled down through it, pushing the lamp ahead of him.
I'm not sure I'll fit,
Larimar said.
If I fit, you will,
Lightsong said, voice muffled by the close confines. He heard another sigh from Larimar, followed by shuffling as the portly man entered the hole. Eventually, Lightsong passed out of another hole into a much larger tunnel. Lit by several lanterns hanging from one of the walls, he stood up, feeling self-satisfied as Larimar squeezed through.
There, Lightsong said, throwing a lever and letting a grate drop down over the opening. They'll have trouble following now.
And we'll have trouble escaping,
Larimar said.
Escape?
Lightsong said, raising his lamp, inspecting the tunnel. Why would we want to do that?
Pardon me, Your Grace,
Larimar said,
but it seems to me that you are getting far too much enjoyment from this experience.
Well, I'm called Lightsong the Bold, Lightsong said. It feels good to finally be living up to the title. Now hush, I can still feel life nearby.
The tunnel was obviously man-made and resembled Lightsong's idea of a mineshaft, just like the image from his dreams. The tunnels had several branches, and the life he sensed was straight ahead. Lightsong didn't go that way, but instead turned left, toward a tunnel that sloped steeply downward. He followed it for a few minutes to judge its likely trajectory.
Figured it out yet?
Lightsong asked, turning to Larimar, who had taken one of the lanterns, as this tunnel didn't have any light of its own.
The lifeless barracks, Larimar said. If this tunnel continues this way, it will lead directly to them.
Lightsong nodded.
Why would they need a secret tunnel to the barracks? Any god could go there whenever he wants,
Larimar shook his head, and they continued down the tunnel. Sure enough, after a short time, they arrived at a trap door in the ceiling that, when pushed up, led into one of the dark, lifeless warehouses. Lightsong shivered, looking out at the endless rows of legs, barely illuminated by his lamp. He pulled his head back down, closed the trap door, and they followed the tunnel further.
"It goes in a square," he said quietly.
"With doors up into each of the lifeless barracks, I'll bet,"
Larimar said. He reached out, taking a piece of dirt from the wall and crumbling it between his fingers.
"This tunnel is newer than the one we were in up above."
Lightsong nodded.
"We should keep moving," he said. "Those guards in Mercystar's palace know we're down here. I don't know who they'll tell, but I'd rather finish exploring before we get chased out."
Larimar shivered visibly at that. They walked back up the steep tunnel to the main one just below the palace. Lightsong still felt life down a side tunnel, but he chose the other branch to explore. It soon became apparent that this one split and turned numerous times.
"Tunnels to some of the other palaces," he guessed,
poking at a wooden beam used to support the shaft. "Old, much older than the tunnel to the barracks." Larimar nodded.
"All right, then," Lightsong said. "Time to find out where the main tunnel goes."
Larimar followed as Lightsong approached the main tunnel. Lightsong closed his eyes, trying to determine how close the life was. It was faint, almost beyond his ability to sense. If everything else in this catacomb hadn't been merely rocks and dirt, he wouldn't even have noticed the life in the first place. He nodded to Larimar, and they continued down the tunnel as quietly as possible. Did it seem that he was able to move with surprising stealth? Did he have unremembered experience with sneaking about? He was certainly better at it than Larimar. Of course, a tumbling boulder was probably better at moving quietly than Larimar, considering his bulky clothing and his puffing exhalations. The tunnel went on straight for a time without branches. Lightsong looked up, trying to estimate what was above them.
"The God King's palace?" he guessed.
He couldn't be certain. It was difficult to judge direction and distance under the ground. He felt excited, thrilled. This was something no god was supposed to do. Sneaking at night, moving through secret tunnels, looking for secrets and clues.
"Odd," he thought. "They give us everything they think that we might want. They glut us with sensation and experience, and yet real feelings, fear, anxiety, excitement, are completely lost to us."
He smiled. In the distance, he could hear voices. He turned down the lamp and crept forward extra quietly, waving for Larimar to stay behind.
"Have him up above," a masculine voice was saying. "He came for the princess's sister, as I said he would."
"You have what you want, then," said another voice.
"Really, you pay far too much attention to that one."
"Do not underestimate Vasher," the first voice said. "He has accomplished more in his life than 100 men, and has done more for the good of all people than you will ever be able to appreciate."
Silence.
"Aren't you planning to kill him?"
said the second voice.
"Yes."
Silence.
"You're a strange one, Denth,"
the second voice said.
"However, our goal is accomplished. You people don't have your war yet. We will."
Lightsong crouched beside a small pile of rubble. He could see light up ahead, but couldn't distinguish much beyond some moving shadows. His luck seemed remarkably good in arriving to hear this conversation. Was that proof that his dreams were, indeed, foretellings? Or was it just coincidence? It was very late at night, and anyone still up was likely to be engaged in clandestine activities.
"I have a job for you," the second voice said. "We've got someone I need you to interrogate."
"Too bad," the first voice said, growing distant. I've got an old friend to torture.